Chapter 5. Before he woke again, Layman Russ dreamed deep. At first, those dreams were of Doolan. He remembered the long hunt to find that world, the gathering of his warriors in the void, and then the opening of the brief, terrible battle over the Crimson Plains. He remembered the face of the beast, the first that he had seen in the Legion's armor, and how that had haunted him and maddened him, and made him ripe for the provocation to come. And then he remembered the fight, and losing Krakenmoor, and breaking his brother's helm. These things were in the past now, many long years ago, though the memory remained as solid and present as his heartbeats. Time's passage had made the events seem almost crazed, hyper-real, stretched across a surreal dreamscape that felt more like a Skjald's embellished saga than the intact past. Perhaps it had not happened like that. Perhaps the lion had taken his stormbirds to the tyrant's fortress, and he himself had teleported in. Perhaps it had not been Ogvi there, but Gunn, or someone else. Had Bjorn been there too? It was a long time ago, so doubtful, but Bjorn seemed to always have been there right from the start, just waiting for his time to come to maturity. The feud with the lion had been ludicrous, pointless, an avoidable collision of egos. His fury at the tyrant was forgotten now, washed away by the thousands he had killed since, so many and so fast that the drive for vengeance had diluted and the art of murder lost its savour. Perhaps Doolan had been a test after all, a test of the lion, maybe, or him, or both of them. How far could the Primarchs be goaded? Would they fight one another? How far would their fury take them? Which was the stronger? But those questions had been given different answers now. He had found more terrible enemies to fight, but they were not the remnants of the old human scattering, but closer to the heart of the Allfather's domain, the brightest stars within his ordained firmament, the trusted souls, the ones charged with keeping the flame alive in the darkness. More dream images came to him, memories and saga fragments tumbling and jumbled one after the other. First Horser had come, and he had known right from the start that the mortals' weird would be strange. Then came the events of Nykaia, and the gradual slide towards catastrophe had begun. Russ dreamed of the burning pyramids that he had cast into ruin, and the anguish of another brother he had fought, and then the howling tempest of the Immaterium claiming its own. After that had come the blood shoals of Alaxes, and Gunn's thread cut, and then Yarrant, and then so many dead that their ghosts still crowded both his waking and his sleeping. At the end, the horror had swamped them, overtaking them until all that remained was desperation. Even a Primarch could despair when all was taken from him. He had seen the ruins of terror after the siege and its lifting, too late to do anything but weep. He had walked through the ashes of the palace, his boots sinking deep into the flaked remnants of the dead. He had known then, with the surety of the foresighted, that the guilt would never leave him. In life, so much had been boasted, so much done. But in the final test, he had not been there in time. Some wounds would heal, some would not. In that time, in that place, few had dared approach him. Those who had survived Horus's world-ending assault wandered across the battlements in a kind of stupor. Fighting still raged across the fallen carcass of the Hearthworld, and would do for months. But he could not stir himself to join it, for the greater contest had ended. He had never seen Dawn return bearing the Allfather's body. He had never seen them carry Sanguinius away. By the time he had made it to Terra, the damage was done, the halls were sealed, the last words of the Master of Mankind heard and acted upon. Now he was gone, locked within a mountain of his own devising, and even his sons could not reach him again. Who could look on that prison of pain, that catacomb of half-life, and not despair? What soul who had witnessed the greatest and best of all creation would not be destroyed by it? When Russ had discovered the truth, he had fled. Fled, for the first time in his life, into the palace interior, running from the sight, raging at the devastation that pressed down on him. The darkness crowded in, choking him, dragging the last flickers of awareness into oblivion. He was exhausted, burned out by Yarrant and then the furious, desperate race to reach the hearth world in time, then the horror of his discovery. And so he fell, deep in the palace that he had failed to guard, and slept again, deep and cold. But before he woke again, Laemon Russ dreamed deep. He dreamed he was back on Fenris a lifetime ago. The snows were new fallen, glittering under a cold, bright sun. The fang, yet to be delved, rose up into the southern horizon, its shoulders streaked. He walked across fields of white, his leather boots sinking into the snow, his breath hanging in clouds around his face. A long journey lay ahead, trekking across the peaks, searching all corners of the realm he now must call his own for eternity. The wanderer walked beside him, cloaked in coarse grey, his face hidden. That face was always hidden. You couldn't look right at it, or it would blind you, like the glare of the unbroken snow. He didn't know how long they had been walking together. Perhaps moments, perhaps a lifetime. "Now is the time, Laemon of the Russ," the wanderer said, in the voice that was both young and old, masculine and feminine, always soft, suffused with a patina of epochal sadness. "What time?" he answered, coming to a halt. The wanderer turned, looking out into the highlands of Azerheim, where the peaks marched under a crystal sky, eternal and inviolate. "For you to do what you were made for, or let your grief end you. Your choice." Russ didn't understand.
"I was made to protect you," he said.
"No, you were always wrong about that. You were made to protect what I created." The wanderer started to walk again, climbing higher, leaning on a staff of iron pine and stooping as he went. Russ watched him go. There were places he couldn't follow. Not anymore. The air chilled him to the bone, and so he turned, trudging back the way they had come. The fang remained, the fortress that was yet to come, and which had been. Work lay ahead there, the great work of his life. But then the dream faded. The chill of the ice world became the chill of the empty palace, and the sunlight faded to the dull grey of Terra's winter. Russ awoke. He blinked, shivered, and pushed himself up from the floor. He remained where he had fallen. He had collapsed into exhausted slumber under the great fresco commemorating the compliance of Doolan, 870.M30. He himself was depicted in it, idealized as the immortal Primarch, along with his brother, wrestling with the dragon and casting it down. The statue was intact, though covered in a thick layer of dust, just as everything in the ruined palace was. The hall was dark, as cold as the Fenris of his dreams, and silent. He was not alone. His brother stood over him, staring up at the images of them both. The Lord of Angels had always been pale, but now his skin had a cadaverous aspect, edged blue in the faint light of a dying world.
"You remember Doolan, then?" he said,
and his voice was as bitter as gall.
"I remember it," said Russ,
clambering stiffly to his feet. He still felt groggy, half lost in the dream. During the race to Terra, he had not slept. They had been far away when word of Horus's final assault reached them. The two of them, the old adversaries, had been both absent when the killing blows were struck. So there was a final irony to crown them all. The lion had his sword drawn, and its grey steel glinted in the cold. It was the same one that Russ had wrenched from his grasp in the tyrant's throne room all those years ago. It was said that he had never let a weapon slip from his fingers since.
"I thought I knew Wrath, Ul'Dulin," said the lion, eyes locked on the image. "But I knew not then what Wrath was."
Russ pushed his way past him, not wanting to do this. History would not remember why they had been delayed, only that they had been, and that would be enough.
"Come back, Lyman," the lion said, turning to follow him.
Russ walked on, tasting the ash on his lips.
"What for, brother?" he asked. "What more is there to say?"
The lion pursued him, catching up at the end of the gallery, where more statues of old triumphs languished in the dust. He reached out and grabbed Russ by the shoulder, spinning him round.
"It was never finished, that jewel," the lion hissed, his grey eyes narrow with fury. "We left it undone, year after year." "You left," said Russ.
He had no stomach for sparring.
"When I woke up, you were gone." "If I had stayed," said the lion, his voice shaking with fervour, "truly, I would have killed you. But now I feel no such restraint. For all is ended, and all is madness, and nothing remains but vengeance for old scores."
Russ made no move to defend himself. He had torn his armour off a long time ago, and in his heavy robes was defenceless. The tip of the lion's sword still hung over him, held aloft by the lion.
"All is not ended," Russ said defiantly, looking his brother in the eye. "Not yet. Not unless we let it be so. But our fight is over. Leave it on Ul'Dulin."
The lion's face contorted in a fury, driven by his unspeakable grief.
"You never learned," he cried. "You should have been faster. It was your pride that kept you in the void."
Still Russ made no move, though the lion's eyes were wild and dangerous.
"And I am guilty. Just as you are,"
the lion urged again, his grip on the sword tight.
"So fight me, and we will pass sentence on each other. The guilty slaying the guilty. I will not ask you again."
It was then Russ knew that his brother could never turn aside. The lion looked as if he was barely seeing the world around him. Perhaps he was back in the tyrant's throne room, incensed, his unimpeachable pride at stake. So Russ made no move. He left his chest exposed, held static under the blade's shadow, undefended, and shook his head. With a cry that was more pain than triumph, the lion shoved his blade deep, carving through flesh, the steel shrieking as it bent against a Primarch's bones. Russ roared out, his back arching, and felt the blackness rear up to cover him. He collapsed, the sword still buried in his chest, hitting the ashen floor with an echoing crack. His last vision was of the Lord of Angels standing over him, tall, terrible, shrouded in the madness of regret. Then even that passed. Once more, just as it had been on Ul'Dulin, awareness slipped away. He felt himself falling, falling further, until the uttermost depth was plumbed, and he knew no more.